Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, delivering an hour of drama. Later on, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin star in The Marriage. But right now, it's the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater featuring Douglas Fairbanks Jr. and stage, screen, and radio star Ethel Barrymore. In the James M. Barrie work, The Old Lady shows her medals from October 7th, 1946 on CBS.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight Lady Esther celebrates one of the truly great occasions in the history of the Screen Guild Players. Two distinguished theatrical families contribute their talents to a famous play by a delightful and witty author. Miss Ethel Barrymore, Mr. Lionel Barrymore, and Mr. Douglas Fairbanks Jr. in J.M. Barrie's play, The Old Lady Shows Her Medals. And since most good plays have a preface, here is Mr. Barrymore with ours. Mr. Barrymore.
You know, most playwrights have an attitude. They'll tell you no one completely understands their characters. Not even the actors who read the lines, who so to speak, put the flesh upon a skeleton of words. Well, we have a brilliant author tonight, and a most distinguished cast. I don't mean to provoke a discussion, but after all, we want to do this play for you, so I'm sure that Ethel and Doug won't mind if Mr. Barrie speaks up occasionally and has his little word or two. And that being mutually agreed upon, I think it's time that we let the author set the scene. The place is London during the war. The war to end all wars. You know, the one before the last one. Three nice old ladies and a criminal, who is even nicer, are discussing the war over a bit of refreshment. Mrs. Dowie, the hostess, who also happens to be our criminal, is the first to speak.
Ladies, do you have another dish of tea?
You notice she calls it a dish of tea, which shows that she's Scotch. Although that's not a crime, though.
Thank you, Mrs. Dowie. I believe I will.
Many times, I'm sure.
So will I.
Now, these nice old ladies are London charwomen, professionally called charwomen and, or simply ands, which mean that they're caretakers, too. All but Mrs. Haggerty. She's just a charwoman and nothing else. Mrs. Haggerty, as a matter of fact, is not at our party by invitation. She simply tagged along after the others and so shuffled into the play against our wish. Though I imagine we could remove her, but since she slipped in, we let her stay, provided she keeps quiet.
Thank you, Mr. Arthur.
Now then, Mrs. Dowie knows, of course, that she is a criminal. But unlike the author, she has no idea she's going to be found out. So all these four lively old codgers, Mrs. Dowie is the merriest, as she presses more tea upon her guests.
Come, ladies, another dish of tea. Just one more winkle, Mrs. Mickleham.
Thank you, Mrs. Dowie. I'm up to there.
As a matter of fact, there's only one winkle left, and the Haggerty woman has her eye on that.
I dare say I should know, and I say it is.
Mrs. Twimley is annoyed. Someone must have contradicted her.
That's what I say it is.
And I say it may be so.
I suppose I ought to know me that has a son a prisoner in Germany.
Oh, she scored with that one. But watch the others rally now.
My son is fighting in France.
Mine was wounded in two places.
Mine's at Salonika.
Excuse me, Mrs. Haggerty, but the correct pronunciation is Saloniki.
I don't think. And I speak as one that has war saving certificate.
And haven't we all? By the way, I had a letter from my Percy yesterday.
My Alfred sent me his photo.
Letters from Salonika is less common.
Well, Mrs. Dowie, you old rogue, will you let yourself be outdone by them? Show them your packet of letters. Go on.
My Kenneth writes to me every week. Look at these, all his.
Well, Alfred has little time for writing, being a bombardier.
Oh, it isn't just how often he writes. Tell me. Do your letters begin, dear mother?
Generally.
Every time.
Kenneth's begin, dearest mother.
Oh, hey, that was a knockout blow. But go ahead, Mrs. Twimley, do your best now.
You're Kenneth, Mrs. Dowie. A short man, I should say, judging by yourself.
6'2" and a half.
Oh. Mm. A kilty, did you tell me?
He's in the famous Black Watch.
Oh, indeed. Well, we can't all be kilty.
That's very true.
Mrs. Dowie, this Kenneth of yours, has he got great hairy legs?
Tremendous. As a matter of fact, I might even say...
Excuse me, old lady, I'll have to stop you there. Naturally, you don't know it yet, but your nemesis is about to enter. Nemesis, in this case, is the Reverend Mr. Willings. Mr. Willings has led a rather drab existence, but happily for him, he'll never know it. On the contrary, he always thinks of himself as in the thick of things. Now, as he enters, his smile is triumphant, for he knows that he's in the thick of them again.
Oh, no, ladies, please, I really can't stay. Only long enough to tell you, that is.
What?
Friends, I have news.
News from the front? My Alfred, sir.
I tell you all at once that all is well. The news is for Mrs. Dowie.
News for me?
Your son, Mrs. Dowie. He has got 5 days' leave.
My son? Are you sure?
Quite sure. He's arrived.
Arrived? In London?
Yes, indeed. I've spoken to him.
Mrs. Dowie, you lucky woman.
Oh, congratulations.
Ladies, believe me, it's quite a romance. I was in the Church Army quarters in Central Street when suddenly, I can't account for it, but suddenly my eyes alighted on a Highlander seated rather drearily on a bench with his kit at his feet.
A big man, Reverend?
A great brawny fellow.
Oh.
My friend, I said, welcome back to Blighty. I make a point of calling it Blighty. I wonder, I said, if there's anything I can do for you. He shook his head. What regiment, I asked. Black Watch, 5th Battalion, he said. Name, I asked. Dowie, he said.
I declare.
I put my hand on his shoulder like this. Kenneth Dowie, I said, I know your mother.
What did he say to that?
He was incredulous. Indeed, he seemed to think I was balmy. So I offered to bring him straight to you.
Bring him to me?
I wonder he needed to be brought.
Oh, he just arrived and was bewildered by the great city. He listened to me in the taciturn Scotch way, and then he gave me a curious laugh.
Laugh?
The Scotch, Mrs. Twimley, expressed their emotions differently from us.
Oh.
When I'd finished, he said at once, let us go and see the old lady.
You mean he's coming?
More than that, Mrs. Dowie. I mean he's here.
Well, now, old lady, you're up against it, aren't you? You know you haven't any son, and yet here he is. You're frightened, of course. You wonder how it'll all turn out. Well, so do we, as a matter of fact, so let's get on with it. Let's get the others decently out, and let's face Private Dowie as he comes down the stairs.
Well, how about it, Mrs.? You recognize your loving son?
I'm pleased I wrote so often, mister.
And I imagine you'll tell me those are my answers, that packet of letters you got in your hand.
Well?
Here, let me see them. Well, they're all in order, apparently. All addressed in pencil to Mrs. Dowie, marked open by Spencer. Hello. Nothing but blank paper inside. Is this your writing on the envelope?
Yes.
So that's it, eh? The covey told me you were a charwoman, so I suppose you picked the envelopes out of waste paper baskets or such like and then changed the addresses, eh?
Yes.
Well, I've got a good mind to...
Oh, no. Don't you burn them letters, mister.
Oh, why not? They're not real letters.
They're all I have.
I thought you had a son.
I never had a man nor a son nor anything. I just call myself Mrs. to give me a standing.
Well, it's past my seeing through. What made you do it?
It was everybody's war, mister, except mine. I wanted it to be my war, too.
Well, you'll need to be plainer. Yet I'm cursed if I care to hear you, you lying old trickster. So I'll be getting on.
Already?
Of course. I just came here to give you an ugly piece of my mind.
Well, you haven't given it to me yet.
Well, you have got a cheek.
Yes, sir. You wouldn't drink some tea.
Me? I tell you, I just came here to blaze away at you.
Oh, well, you could blaze away while you was drinking tea. And there's Winkles.
Winkles? Where?
Right here in the... Oh, well, there was Winkles. Mrs. Haggerty must have got the last.
Well, it doesn't matter. I wouldn't touch your Winkles, not me. You're just a common rogue.
Yes, sir.
Now then, out with it. I want the truth.
It's God's truth. My name is Dowie, mister.
No, it's enough to make me change mine. Go on.
I've been charring and charring and charring as far back as I mind. I've been in London these 20 years.
We'll skip your early days. I have an appointment.
And then when I was old, the war broke out.
Well, how could that affect you?
Oh, mister, that's the thing. It didn't affect me. It affected everybody but me. The neighbors looked down on me. Even the posters on the walls of the woman saying, "Go, my boy," leered at me. I sometimes cried by myself in the dark. You wouldn't have a cup of tea?
No.
Then sudden-like the idea come to me to pretend I had a son.
You depraved old liar. But what in the name of old Nick made you choose me out of the whole British army?
Maybe, mister, because I liked you best.
Oh, now, woman.
I read one day in the papers in which he was assisted by Private K. Dowie, 5th Battalion, Black Watch.
Yeah, did you know? I expect that's the only time I ever was in the papers. And how did you guess the K stood for Kenneth?
Does it? An angel whispered it to me in my sleep.
Well, that's the only angel in the whole black business. Yeah, you little thought I'd turn up, did you? Or did you?
I was beginning to be weary for the sight of you, Kenneth.
What word was that?
Mister.
Well, I hope you're pleased with me now that you see me.
I'm very pleased. Does your folk live in Scotland?
Aye, in Glasgow.
Both living?
Aye.
Is your mother terrible proud of you?
Naturally.
And be going on to them?
Well, after I've had a skite in London first.
Sure, she's in London.
Who?
Your young lady.
And if she is, are you jealous?
Not me.
No, you needn't be. She's a young thing.
He surprises me. A beauty, no doubt.
You may be sure she's a titled person, too. And in the magazines, you're always reading of her.
I am.
If you can read. But she's been good to me. Send me a lot of good things she has, especially cakes and a worsted waistcoat with a loving message on the enclosed card. But it was the cakes that...
Mister, won't you try one of my cakes?
No, not me.
They're my own making.
No, I thank you.
Oh, but you must. You must. Here is one that Mrs. Haggerty had no chance to... What's the matter, mister? The way you look. Tell me.
That's exactly the kind of cake her ladyship sends me.
And was the waistcoat right, mister? I hope the Black Watch colors pleased you.
I never mentioned the colors. Now, wait a minute. Was it you? Well, was it?
I daren't give my own name, you see, and I was always reading here in the papers.
Woman, is there no getting rid of you?
I hope I haven't made you angry.
Oh, the devil! Give me some tea.
Second act of the Green Guild play will follow in a moment. And now, the second act of The Old Lady Shows Her Medal, starring Ethel Barrymore, Lionel Barrymore, and Douglas Fairbanks, Jr. Now, once again, Lionel Barrymore takes over the author's duties.
You're in glory, aren't you? There he is, big as life, sitting at your table, eating your food. No wonder you hover behind his chair. No wonder you keep murmuring...
Kenneth.
Huh? What's that you said?
Nothing. Just Kenneth. Will you have another dish of tea?
Ah, maybe I will. But don't you go thinking for 1 minute, Mrs., that you've got me.
Oh, no, no.
No, no, just as long as we understand each other. Besides, I have a theater tonight. So, here's to you, old mop and pail. Ave atque vale.
What's that?
That means hail and farewell. It's Latin.
Oh, are you a scholar?
Well, being Scots, there's almost nothing I don't know.
You're a proper man to look at, Kenneth.
I am generally admired.
She's an enviable woman.
Who?
Your mother.
Huh? Oh, that. that was just protecting myself. I have neither father, nor mother, nor wife, nor grandmama. Now, this party never even knew who his proud parents were.
Is that true?
It's gospel.
Heaven be praised.
No, none of that. I was a fool to tell you. And don't think you can take advantage of it. Pass the cake.
I dare say it's true. We'll never meet again, Kenneth.
I wouldn't wager on it. When I get to Paris, no doubt I'll find you waiting for me with a cup of tea.
Oh, Kenneth. If just once before I die, I could be fitted for a Paris gown with a dreamy corsage. Oh.
What is it?
Hairy legs.
Mind your manners. Anyway, I must be stepping. Thank you for my tea.
Not at all. Where are you living?
Well, there's a place called the Hut where some of the 2nd Battalion are. They'll take me in. Beggars can't be choosers.
Beggars?
Well, I've never been here before. If you know what it means to be in a place like London without a friend, you know it.
That's my condorum, too, Kenneth.
I'm sorry for you, you poor old lady. But I see no way out for either of us.
Do you not?
Are you at it again?
Kenneth, I've heard that what a man on leave longs for more than anything else is a bed with sheets and a bath.
And you never heard anything truer.
Well, then, Kenneth Dowie, open that door, the door to the pantry.
Yes?
Now lift the dresser top and tell me what you see.
Well, it's a kind of a bath.
You could bath yourself there, pretty Kenneth, half at a time.
But I...
And that isn't all. You think this is a wardrobe, don't you? But when I open the door, you see a bed.
Whoosh! That's the dodge we need in the trenches.
That's your bed, Kenneth.
Mine? Well, what about you?
Oh, there's a woman next door who'll give me a shake down till your leave is up.
Ah, you queer old divot. What can make you so keen to be burdened with a lump like me? I tell you, I'm the commonest kind of man.
And I'm just the commonest kind of old wifey myself.
I've been a kickabout all my life, and I'm no great shakes at the war.
Yes, you are. How many Germans have you killed?
Well, just 2 for certain, and there was no glory in it. It was just they wanted my shirt.
Have you took prisoners?
Well, once I took 6.
But how could one man take 6?
The usual way. I surrounded them. You know, this mattress is on the fairish side. Old lady, if you really want me to, I'll bide.
Oh.
But mind you, I don't accept you as a relation.
Oh.
For your personal glory, you can go on pretending to the neighbors. But the best I can promise you is that you're on probation. I'm a cautious character, but we must see how you'll turn out.
Yes, Kenneth.
And now I think for that bath. My theater begins at 6:30, and I wouldn't want to be...
What is it, Kenneth?
A theater. I just happened to think... It would be showier if I took a lady.
Kenneth, tell me this instant what you mean. Don't keep me on the jumps.
No, it couldn't be done.
Was it me you were thinking of?
Nah, just for a moment. But you have no style.
Not in this, of course. But, oh, Kenneth, you saw me in my merino. It's laced up the back in the very latest.
Well.
You can see for yourself. It's right here in the drawer. There, Kenneth, look.
Yeah, it looks not so bad. But have you got a bit of chiffon for the neck? It's not the bombs nor the Kaisers nor Tipperary that men think of in the trenches. It's chiffon.
I swear I have, Kenneth. And I have a bangle and a muff and gloves.
Aye. Tell me, do you think you could give your face a less homely look?
Oh, yes, Kenneth. I'm sure I could.
Very well, then. You can have a try.
And so he leaves you, old lady, to bath himself. And so we leave you two for the moment. Ringed around with entrancing hopes. In fact, we won't see you again until some evenings later. We'll be curious, naturally, to learn what's transpired, so we'll be waiting for you in your rooms. And as it happens, we won't be alone.
Almost midnight, Mrs. Twimley. Where could they be?
At the theater again, I'll warrant.
I was to the theater once. I was took by a toff. Treated me just
quiet.
Like...
There's a motor outside.
A taxi, no less. It's her 3rd this week.
Look at her. Getting out like a queen. What's she in?
The new Astrakhan jacket he gave her with Venus sleeves.
Has she sold her gabardine coat?
Oh, no, dear. She's wearing the Astrakhan and carrying the gabardine flung careless-like over her arm.
I saw her strutting about with him yesterday as if the 2 of them made a procession.
Hush. They're coming down the stairs.
strike me dead if she's not hooked on his arm.
Oh. Still, here they are.
Well, ladies. Kenneth, we have visitors.
Ah, your servant, ladies.
Oh, well, we should apologize, Mrs. Dowie. We're not meaning to stay.
You're very welcome, I'm sure. Just wait till I get out of my astrakhan and my muff and my gloves and my excelsior. A little present from Fred.
Mr. Dowie, you've given her a glory time.
Oh, it's her that's given it to me, Mrs.
He just pampered me. And the saints forgive us for this being the last night. We had a sit-down supper at a restaurant. Mm. I swear by heaven we had champagne wine.
Oh.
And to them as doubts my words, here's the cork.
I'm sure we don't grudge you your treat, Mrs. Dowie, and sorry we are that this is the end.
The end?
Yes. Yes, I must be off in 10 minutes.
Oh, of course. If you'll excuse me, lady.
Yeah, strange. Why should she hide in the pantry like that?
Oh, poor thing. She's too polite to break down in company. Well, we must run, Mr. Dowie. You'll be having some last words to say to her.
That's why I kept her out so long, to have less time to say them in.
Oh, it's the best way. Come along, ladies. Good luck, Cocky. Goodbye,
sir. Devil. Well, I might as well face it. Old lady.
Is it time?
No, not yet. Dixon's coming by for me. I told him to whistle when I must go.
All's ended. Everything.
Now then, you promised to be gay. We were to help one another.
Yes, Kenneth.
That's no way to say goodbye. No way at all.
I'm sorry, Kenneth.
Besides, I've something to discuss with you. Have you noticed you've never called me son?
Have I noticed? I was feared, Kenneth. You said I was on probation.
Aye, and so you were. Well, the probation's ended. And if you want me, you can have me.
Oh, Kenneth, will I do?
Woman, don't be so forward. Wait till I've proposed.
Propose for a mother.
What for, no? Mrs. Dowie, you queer old cow, you spunky old biddy, have I your permission to ask you the most important question a neglected orphan can ask of an old lady?
None of your sauce, Kenneth.
For a long time, Mrs. Dowie, you cannot have been unaware of my sonnish feelings for you.
Wait till I take my mop to you.
And if you're not unwilling to be my mother, I swear I'll never ask another.
Oh, Kenneth.
Tell me, Mother, was I a well-behaved infant?
Not you, sonny. You were a rampaging rogue.
Was I slow in learning to walk?
The quickest in our street. Was that the whistle?
No.
I thought...
Look here. In taking me over, you have, in a manner of speaking, joined the Black Watch.
I like to think that, Kenneth.
And you must therefore behave so the regiment will be proud of you.
Oh. Son!
Aye, that's the style. Now listen. I've sent in your name as my nearest of kin, and your allowance will be coming to you in the nearest way.
Oh, is it wicked, Kenneth?
Aye, well, I'll take the responsibility for it in both worlds. You see, I want you to be safeguarded in case...
Kenneth!
Son!
I forgot.
Have no fear. I'll be back. Covered with mud and medals. And mind you, have that cup of tea waiting for me. Now, what fun we'll have writing to one another. Real letters this time.
Yes.
I hope her ladyship will go on sending me cake.
You may be sure.
Here, let me tie my scarf around your neck like that. You must have been a bunny thing when you were young, eh?
Blue was always my color. I can't... Oh...
There's the whistle, old lady. It's time.
Go now, Kenneth. Please.
Old lady, you are what Blighty means to me now.
I think it's fair to leave you that way. So we'll just have one more look at you. A month or two after Kenneth's death in action. It's early morning, and you're having a look at your medals. Kenneth's medals, before setting off on your daily round. First the medals, then the scarf, and And then the champagne cork, whose tinsel needs a bit of polishing with your apron. No tears as you look at them. No, no. No tears as you put them back. No tears. But rather a triumphant pride as you lift your pail and mop again and say to no one in particular.
Well, off to work.
On behalf of the Motion Picture Relief Fund, thank you, Ethel and Lionel Barrymore and Douglas Fairbanks, Jr., for a memorable performance.
The Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS broadcast from October 7th, 1946. The story by James M. Barry was actually first seen on television in the UK in 1937, at a time where there were only between 10 and 15,000 television receivers in homes and taverns. And on the big screen in the following year, starlet Ethel Barrymore would be seen in four motion pictures, among them The Paradigm Case, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. You're listening to an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for the acting team of Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin in a broadcast of The Marriage on NBC from Valentine's Day 1954.
Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin in The Marriage. With the conviction that marriage remains the most popular domestic arrangement between friendly people, NBC takes pleasure in presenting by transcription one of the most distinguished couples of the American theater, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin, as Liz and Ben Marriott in the love and laughter of The Marriage.
When I was in college, I put in a hard year with Economics 1 and 2. The course seemed to consist of complicated graphs with the annual output of cast iron hinges plotted against the monthly rainfall in the Mississippi Valley. Somewhere along the line, the curve hit bottom, and that, we are told, was the operation of the business cycle, that unknown force that periodically slips a monkey wrench into the wheels of industry. I thought of that mysterious monkey wrench recently when trouble hit the firm of Connolly, Hochberg, Marriott, and Burns. However, the monkey wrench in this case was not quite as cosmic. Mr. Hochberg called me in one morning to tell me about it.
Sit down, then.
I drew the complaint on that Benson matter. I think they'll settle.
They'd be fools to. We haven't got a leg to stand on.
Oh, I don't know. You turned out a brilliant brief.
Yes, yes, it is brilliant. Fine development of character. Sensitive prose. It would do very well in the Saturday Review of Literature. In the Circuit Court? Not so good.
Maybe we could get it reprinted in a pocket edition. With Mrs. Benson on the cover?
Ben, I didn't call you in to talk about the Benson complaint.
No?
Ben, I am an old man. Actually, I've been an old man since I was 25. But that's neither here nor there. My doctor says, Hochberg, liquor you can take. Women, tobacco, rich food. But aggravation... No.
Something wrong, Mr. Hochberg?
Ben, we are splitting up the farm.
What? You and Mr. Connolly? Why, you've worked together for years.
Ben, Connolly is a fine lawyer. He's a gentleman. He's a man of honesty and integrity. But he is also a stubborn mule.
Oh. You had a difference of opinion?
Oh, no, no. We agreed. We are in absolute agreement.
Well, then that's fine.
Absolute agreement. Connolly said continuing our partnership would be the biggest mistake of my career. And I said, I agree.
What started all this, Mr. Hochberg? You've always worked so well together.
Then, things have been said in a public elevator with the operator and four passengers, which should never even be said in the privacy of this room.
You mean you quarreled?
Basically, it was a personality clash.
What about?
Doesn't matter. It is immaterial and irrelevant.
Well, now, maybe if you talked it over with Mr. Connolly...
We have already talked it over at length. I have said my say, he has said his.
Well, you could go with me now to his office.
No.
Well, you could ask him to come in here.
No.
How about my office? It's halfway.
Halfway is too far. It's settled, Ben. We have no longer anything to discuss.
But what are you going to do?
When I was a young man, I was a violinist.
Oh?
Not a Heifetz or a Menuhin, but not a wedding fiddler either. Then I fell in love. My prospective father-in-law took one look at the violin case and had a heart attack. He put me through law school. I have never regretted it. Mrs. Hochberg is a wonderful woman who is now on our second analyst. Wouldn't break my heart if I had some time to play again. Just for myself. I took the violin out last night and tuned it. Beautiful.
You mean you'd retire from the law?
Not exactly. I'd have a new firm. I brought you into this one, and we agreed you could always leave with me if you want to.
Why, of course, if it comes to that. But isn't there some way...
Don't waste your time, then. Oh, of course, Connolly has all the contacts. I never learned how to play golf. I don't like martinis, so the big clients would go with him.
Yes, I suppose they would. American Foundry account... Clewitt, Washburn, Hassett, and Klein.
Don't add them up. It's very depressing. We'd have a hard time for a year or two, Ben. But eventually we'd make out.
Yeah, I suppose so.
I told Connolly my children were grown up. I'm not an ambitious man. Don't threaten me, I said. I started defending pickpockets and suing the streetcar companies. I can go back to it.
Mr. Hochberg, they've replaced all the streetcars.
Oh, I can sue bus companies.
Mr. Hochberg, do you mind if I just speak to Mr. Connolly?
Go ahead. Such an old friend. Like a part of me. So many years.
But surely if you feel that way about Mr. Connolly...
Connolly? A violin?
I found Mr. Connolly practicing 18-foot putts catty-corner across his office. I tried to get to the bottom of the quarrel with Hochberg, but he seemed to feel the same way about it. The original point of difference, whatever it was buried beneath an exchange of invective. I left Mr. Connolly making wedge shots over the desk into the waste paper basket. Somehow the news spread through the office like a virus, and I saw several of the stenographers and the mailroom boy looking through the help wanted section in the Times. I took a look at my check stubs and decided not to add up the balance till I was feeling better. When I got home that night, I found the usual Marriott riot in progress.
Pete, you don't put ketchup in chicken soup.
And why not?
Father!
No ketchup.
What's going on?
Pete and Emily decided I needed a rest. They're cooking supper.
Featuring ketchup consomme?
Pete is a little imaginative. He wanted to try sardines and peanut butter.
Oof.
Luckily, Emily is conservative. We're having scrambled eggs.
Pete, that's too much salt.
I like too much salt.
We can go out for hamburgers later.
Oh, Ben, they're trying very hard. Emily baked a sort of a pie.
What is a sort of a pie?
Well, it's round. Well,
that's a good start. Oh.
Something wrong?
Headache. There's nothing, really. Really nothing.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that suit came back from the cleaners.
That is all day. Right here, over my eyes.
Did you take anything for it?
We'll go away. Don't worry.
Oh, all right. They mended the pocket.
Sort of a migraine. Or sinus.
Well, let me get you an aspirin.
No, don't bother, really.
Oh, okay.
Maybe two aspirins.
Hey, you're putting curry powder on the pie.
Well, I thought it was cinnamon.
Maybe three aspirins.
Is there something really wrong, Ben? Something at the office?
I don't want to talk about it yet, Liz.
Well, you do look worried, dear. And your resistance has been awfully low. You've had one cold after another.
Yeah, I guess so.
Ben, I know just what you need.
I guess so. I'll gargle with it after supper.
No, not anything like that. You need a vacation.
I'm liable to get one. A nice, long one.
Oh, will you, Ben? We could go to Mexico. If you fly, you can do it in 2 weeks easily. Mike and Peg went last year. It'll probably cost Not more than $500 or $600. I know it's extravagant.
Liz, you see, the thing I was worried about...
Well, that's it. Then we wouldn't have a worry in the world. We could just be irresponsible, shoot the works. It's just what you need now, darling.
Just what... Liz, we'd better have a little conference. You see, the problem...
Come and get it!
Oh, no. Oh, my head.
Come and get it! Come on, please. Mother, Daddy, dinner is served.
We'd better go in. Oh, dear. Ben, I didn't get your aspirin.
Never mind. I'll take them with a bicarb chaser after dinner. After a fine dinner of salt eggs and curried apple pie, Liz and I settled down to do the dishes while the kids went off to do homework, and I explained the precipice on which Connolly, Hochberg, Marriott, and Burns was balanced.
Yes, but what did they quarrel about?
I don't know. Neither of them would tell me.
Oh, it seems perfectly infantile.
I tried to convince both of them to talk it over, but they're both waiting for the other one to make the first move. Looks like they're really going to dissolve that firm.
What does that mean for us?
Well, I'd never be able to make a connection like that these days. Big firms take on kids, fresh out of school.
Could you open your own office?
Oh, that takes capital and contacts. I haven't got either.
Well, how about a corporation legal staff?
No, they want experts in tax law or labor law. I'm afraid the best thing to do would be just to go along with Hochberg. I could take up the cello and we could play duets.
Well, that wouldn't be so good financially, would it?
I probably wouldn't draw a nickel for the first year.
Oh, Ben. I am sorry about that Mexico thing.
No, you didn't know. Here, this fork is dirty.
It's got mustard on it. We didn't have anything tonight that had mustard in it.
I suspected the coffee.
Ben, we'll just have to sit down and figure out where we can cut down.
Well, it hasn't happened yet.
No, of course it hasn't.
Connolly and Hochberg can't be so foolish. They'll talk it out. They'll make it up.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
Foolish to hang crepe in advance. Probably won't even happen.
Of course it won't.
You know, if I walk cross town instead of taking the bus, I can save at least $1.20 a week.
Are you awake?
Yes. Haven't you been asleep?
Wait just a minute. 763, carriage, one.
Ben, what are you doing?
Nothing, go on back to sleep. Did I say 63?
Ben, it's 3:30 in the morning. This is no time for mental arithmetic.
Liz, do you know that in 1 year I spend $73 on haircuts, shoe shines, and razor blades?
Ben, you're not going to cut down on haircuts.
No, I suppose that is foolish. Liz, I've been thinking about the kids. Bound to affect them.
Hmm. Well, there's no point in bothering them till it actually happens.
I suppose not. Well, go back to sleep.
All right. Ben?
Mm-hmm.
How many bobby pins do you suppose I use in a year?
We had the full dress ways and means hearing scheduled for the next night. When I got home, Liz met me at the door.
Well, anything happened, Ben?
Connolly met Hochberg at the water cooler.
He did. Well.
Each one took his pill and went back to his own office.
Oh.
They didn't say a word. After dinner, we got out our checkbooks and piled the unpaid bills on the table.
Does it look bad, Ben?
Car insurance is due next month. My life insurance the month after.
All the Christmas bills are in this month's charge account.
All adds up to just one thing.
What?
If we cut out eating and move into Central Park, we may break even.
I'll get it. Mike!
Hi, Liz!
Ben, it's Mike and Peg. Come on in.
Oh, we just dropped by, Liz. We're on our way to the theater. Hi, Ben.
Hi. Here, I'll just clear this stuff away.
Well, counting all your money, Ben?
After a fashion.
Why didn't you call, Peg? You could have dinner here.
Yeah, I'll fix your drink.
We haven't got time, really.
We just came up because I couldn't wait to tell you.
Tell us what?
Peg, you're not... Oh, of course I'm not. Oh, for goodness sake, Mike, tell them before it gets embarrassing.
Ben, I bet you thought I forgot, didn't you? I'll bet that's what you were thinking.
No, no, I wasn't.
Oh, sure you were. It was over 3 months ago.
It was?
Remember I was telling about that friend of mine in the discount house?
I remember something about that.
Well, I didn't forget. I got it.
Oh. Oh, you got it. Well, that's nice.
Nice? Is that all you can say? Nice. Ben, it's 40 off.
Well, that's pretty far off.
Oh, you bet. They're shipping it straight to your place in Connecticut.
Wait a minute. They're shipping what?
The freezer, of course. A freezer.
Well, you remember, Ben. I told you about this fellow, Arthur Jonas.
Oh, no.
And you said you'd like to get your hands on a freezer for your place in Connecticut. Well, you got your hands on one.
But, Mike, I didn't think you'd remember.
I wrote it right down in my little book. It's a real buy, Ben. 40% off list price is not to be sneezed at.
Well, I didn't sneeze.
They'll bill you direct. What a price. $534.
$500? What's it used for? Hockey games?
Hockey games?
But that isn't the best part. Liz, this will knock you clear off your feet.
Oh, I'm staggering a little now.
I arranged with our freezer food plant to stock it. $350 worth of frozen food. It's on its way to Connecticut now.
Hey,
I told Mike you'd want a good start.
Well, this gave me one, all right.
Oh, you'll love the freezer, Liz. You save so much money, it practically pays for itself.
Well, that's good. Now, look, Mike, I appreciate it very much, but I'm in no position...
Oh, don't thank me, Ben. It just embarrasses me.
Mike, it's 7:45, and you know you can't get a cab when it's raining.
Yeah, well, so long, Liz,
no,
Ben.
Mike, wait a minute. The bills
are
something...
Oh, don't worry, Ben. I fixed it. They'll mail all the bills direct to you.
Bye, Liz. Bye, Ben.
Bye.
Well, looks like a cold winter. Actually, Liz and I had been avoiding the most obvious step. While skimping on crosstown buses and bobby pins, we both studiously neglected to mention the one monster extravagance of the Marriott household. A place in Connecticut. We succeeded in deluding ourselves until the next night when reality caught up with us.
Ben, any new developments?
Neither of them came in today.
Well, maybe they met somewhere.
No, I don't think so. Connolly played 18 holes in Westchester, and Hochberg went to hear Sigetti at Carnegie Hall.
Looks bad.
Certainly does.
Hi, Mommy. Listen, I've got the most wonderful... Oh, hi, Daddy.
Hi.
Mommy, I've got the most wonderful idea, and Ellie's mother says it's perfectly all right, so it's just up to you. Is it all right with you?
Well, it's what all right? You left something out.
Did I? Oh, I guess so. Well, I was talking with Ellie at lunch about summers, and I said I wouldn't go to camp this year because for one thing I'm too old, and for another thing we have the house in Connecticut. And then I had the idea.
About the house in Connecticut?
Sure. Why couldn't we have Ellie there for July at least? And maybe August?
Well, that's a lovely idea, Emily, but...
We went over to Ellie's after school, and her mother says it's fine if it's all right with you. We spend the whole afternoon planning it. Am I old enough to get a driver's license in Connecticut?
I'm afraid not, dear.
Oh, well, we'll manage somehow.
Liz, don't you think we'd better go in?
I suppose so. We can't avoid it, can we?
Emily, about the house...
Ellie's parents can't afford sending her somewhere for the summer. She spent all last July and August in the city. Isn't that awful? I can't imagine it. I'd just die.
Emily, darling, we may be selling the house in Connecticut. We've sort of decided not to have a summer place.
Daddy, but you can't have... I've already invited Ellie.
Well, you'll have to explain, dear.
I think it's very unilateral of you to do this without consulting me.
Look, Emily, your mother and I are still making the decisions in this household.
Well, I'm part of the family, too. And if you think I'm going to spend this summer on the subway going to Coney Island, you're crazy.
Now, wait a minute, Emily.
You
listen
to me.
You
go wash up for supper, Emily.
But that attitude is...
We'll talk about this later.
Why bother talking to me at all? I don't count.
Why, the spoiled brat.
It isn't going to be easy.
By summer, we may not even have that subway fare to Coney Island.
Now, Ben, you're exaggerating.
What would happen if we did have to cut so far down? She'd curl up like a potato chip. Suppose Pete couldn't get all those model cars he builds. Suppose Emily didn't have a new sweater every time she's bored with the old one.
They've never had to face the problem, Ben.
Well, they do now. Liz, we must have made things far too easy for those kids.
Do you really think it's that serious?
Yes, I do. Lots of families go through things like this. It's happening now in Detroit, other places. But the whole family works together. Whatever sacrifices they make together.
Emily was right. We didn't discuss it with her.
No, you can tell that by her attitude.
Maybe we ought to have a serious talk with her about the whole problem.
Oh, it's no use, Liz. I just don't feel up to it. I think I'll go in and lie down before supper. I went into the bedroom and stretched out in the dark. I was disappointed in Emily. I wanted to tell her that it wouldn't matter, that as long as we stayed a family, as long as we loved each other and understood each other, it wouldn't matter what happened. But I was frightened now that the kids might not understand. And then I suppose I felt a little guilty, as if somehow the whole thing were my fault. I wanted Emily to have the summer in the country. I wanted Pete to have every exorbitant car model he coveted. I began to wonder if our family put too high a value on things. Perhaps the children were a mirror of my own false standards. And I hated that reflection of myself. If they were empty, it was, well, because I'd given them nothing to fill the void. We didn't talk about it that evening. Liz and I watched television with glazed eyes, and I sat through the Late Late Show, Charlie Chan and the Collegiate Murders, just because I couldn't face going to bed, lying there, thinking. When I came home the next afternoon from the office, I barely got my hat and coat off when I was mobbed.
Daddy, you have to sign these here and here and here.
Sign what? What are all these papers?
They have to be signed by your parent or guardian in the school.
What's going on? New York State Department. What is this?
My working papers.
Working papers? Liz!
Hello, darling. The macaroni casserole will be ready in 15 minutes.
What are you doing with working papers, Emily?
Well, it's a state law.
I know it is, but why you?
I got a job at school, washing bottles and test tubes in the chem lab. It pays 40 cents an hour.
Well, that's not bad. Liz, what happened?
Mom had a talk with us this morning. I told the kids in school we'd probably go on relief.
Peter, we're not going on relief.
You never can tell.
I'm awfully sorry about the house and what I said, Daddy, but, gee, I didn't know.
I know, Emily. I know you didn't.
I mean, if we're poor, well, that's different.
Pete and I figure that a macaroni casserole supper will cost us 18 cents apiece.
And I've got the summer all figured out. Bobby Logan's mother would need somebody to help in their cheese store. Daddy, you just sign the papers. Here, here, and over here.
Hey, Pop, do you think there's more money in shoe shining or delivering for the drugstore?
Pete, I don't think either will be necessary. And if you'll have a look out on the hall table, there's a steak that we can have with that macaroni.
A steak? Ben, what happened?
Hochberg and Connolly met on neutral territory, the men's washroom.
You mean they made up?
They had to.
Oh.
Hochberg's daughter had a baby, and Connolly's youngest son's getting married. They just had to brag to each other. Hochberg gave Connolly a cigar, Connolly bought Hochberg a drink, and the whole thing is all over.
Oh, Ben. Ben, darling, that's wonderful.
You mean we're not poor? We won't go on relief.
That's right. Come on, let's have a big family celebration.
Hooray.
Now what's the matter?
We had it all figured out to be so brave. And now that's all spoiled.
Well, we'll just have to keep our heads up high and suffer through with an adequate income.
We certainly will.
Daddy.
Yes?
I think I'll keep that lab job. After all, even if we're not going to be poor, there's no reason why I shouldn't take care of my own spending money. After all, I'm a part of the family.
Emily, I think that's a wonderful idea.
Besides, I'll have an independent income.
Darling, I always wanted a woman with an independent income in the family.
Oh, Daddy.
Come on now. Let's get at that 18-cent macaroni and the $4 steak.
Thank you. Ben and Liz Marriott will be back in a moment. In the meantime, let us extend an invitation on behalf of our stars, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin, as well as the National Broadcasting Company, to all of you to drop by next week at this time for another half-hour observation and transcription of The Marriage, written by Ernest Canoy, with Denise Alexander, heard as Emily, David Pfeffer as Pete, Peter Capel as Mr. Huckberg, Joseph Curtin as Mike, and Patricia Wheel as Peg. To those of you who have been so generous in writing to either the network or the stars to express your appreciation of The Marriage, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin extend warm thanks. The Marriage is an NBC Radio Network production directed by Edward King. This is Robert Denton speaking.
What is it, dear?
I've been thinking. Maybe I should keep that job in Bobby Logan's mother's store.
All summer? Emily, you don't have to be as independent as that.
Oh, it isn't the money. I was thinking with Bobby working there all summer, there might be other advantages.
I imagine there would be.
Good night, Mommy. Daddy.
Good night, Emily.
Good night, darling.
James Stewart stars in The Six Shooter following the news on the NBC Radio Network.
The Marriage, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 14, 1954 on NBC. Closing out this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBonier. Thanks for listening.